Achtung, Achtung! Das Internet musste vorübergehend abgeschaltet werden. Bewahren Sie Ruhe. Bleiben Sie zu Hause, bis die digitale Infrastruktur wiederhergestellt ist. Der Notstand wird so schnell wie möglich beendet. Geldautomaten sind so lange außer Betrieb. Wegen einer akuten Hitzewelle ist die Kühlung von Kraftwerken und großen Rechenzentren ausgefallen. Das Stromnetz ist am Limit.
This is a BBC podcast. You can get all our podcasts and our terms of use at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
People believed in what they sang. I mean, they believed. Some of them maybe not, but still, it's some sort of magic. This music, it's like a special corridor, directly to the heart or soul or brain, I don't know what is this. Our bright spot in a dark life in the Soviet Union.
The big children's choir of the Soviet Union sang the soundtrack of its time. It sang to the leaders, it sang through perestroika, and to ordinary people the length and breadth of the USSR. Their world seemed unchanging, permanent. But this was to be the last Soviet generation.
We're just arriving in the Bolshoi Theatre. It's just reopened after 6 years of restoration. Misha performed here. As a little boy, is that right, Misha?
That's right, with the choir. For some of the government functions that they had here, big concerts with our leaders in the audience.
Misha Strangrud has just flown in from Los Angeles. He's back in Moscow to meet old friends, back in a world he left behind 20 years ago.
The doors to the Bolshoi Theatre.
Goodness, you know it's going to be big.
Unbelievable.
Shall we walk down to the front and see how it would have looked when you were singing from the stage?
This is the story of Misha, his friend Sasha, and Masha, three ordinary children born in extraordinary times.
Usually the party officials would sit in that big lodge.
A very ornamental gold box with the velvet curtains.
Very royal looking.
Very royal looking and huge.
Looking box.
Right in the front.
And there is the new symbol of Russia now hangs above it. Double-headed eagle with the crown. And at the time it was all hammer and sickles. And the curtain also was all covered with hammer and sickles. As a young boy singing in the choir, you obviously looking outside, seeing where are the people, you know, where are the leaders of the country sitting.
First of all, this choir was like royalty.
Sasha Tsaliuk stood just below Misha to the left.
It was very honorable to join such a choir because that choir was always on screen, always on radio, and if you are a member of that choir, you are a real special boy or girl. When the children choir came out and sang, it was a storm of applause. You know, the whole audience stood up and started applause like crazy. I think even more than to the pop stars.
The Big Children's Choir was founded as part of all USSR state broadcasting in 1970, the Brezhnev era. It had unique reach. Patriotic songs, young communist songs, songs from popular cartoons, channeled through the radios and televisions of 60 million homes. Diana Berlin worked for the All-USSR TV and radio company.
We broadcast absolutely all over the Soviet Union, from the Arctic Circle, beyond the Arctic Circle, even to the reindeers, everywhere. The ships far out in the oceans could hear our signal. Everywhere people listened and they called us. They wrote to us. They sent telegrams. It was a conversation for the whole huge country.
How many listeners do you think you had?
Миллионы, миллионы.
The choir was open to all on merit, and hundreds of children waited for the day each year when the huge red billboards went up in Moscow and the radio announced auditions.
I was 6 years old. It was a reklama advertisement at the radio that they are inviting new people to this choir. It was very musical and they sang all my childhood life. And I liked very much to listen radio and I heard this choir all the time. And I repeat the songs from the morning till the evening until my mother became completely mad. And I said, Mother, Mother, I want to go there, please. And I made hysterica at home. They didn't want, actually, at the beginning. Then they brought me, and we had proslushivanie, means, you know, like a small exam.
Audition.
Yes, right, completely. And you had to have a very good sense of rhythms, and, of course, you must have ears.
The children may have all seemed alike, but like Soviet adults, they led lives of subtle layers. Sasha's family has deep Jewish roots. Misha, he always felt as though he belonged somewhere else. Masha Lvova's mother listened in the kitchen to tapes of dissident poetry.
We were all very, very diverse. Kids from outside Moscow who had to take electric train for an hour and a half to go to the rehearsals, or kids from quite wealthy, good families, intelligentsia, probably this is the right word, from the working class families, from non-Russian families. So we were such a diverse group. I was a very insecure little girl who was extremely happy to be among these talented, brilliant, outstanding people. I felt to in a very special, very elite group of people.
It was very interesting life. The schedule, how my schedule was incredible, nobody believed. And I live in this schedule until now. In the morning, when I woke up, like zombie, I came to the secondary school, and I was there, let's say, from 8:30 in the morning until 1 o'clock. Then I come back, eat something on the way, and I came with a cello, I play cello, to the secondary musical school. Then after that, I left cello, and instead of preparing home tasks for the next day, my grandmother or mother or, son, or father brought me to Smolenskaya metro station, to the old school where was a rehearsal with the children choir. And I spent there time from 7 o'clock in the evening until almost 9:30, 3 days a week.
To be in a choir meant to devote all of yourself to the choir. Most of us didn't study very well, so most of us just had to do our homeworks at night or in the metro. There was no free time at all.
Что вы так свою мелодию поете? Не нужно.
At the heart of the choir stood its creator, director, and inspiration, Viktor Sergeyevich Popov, tall, straight-backed, restless, and lit from within. Born in 1934, Viktor Popov grew up an orphan from a small town in the darkest years of Stalin's Soviet Union.
I think as an artist, you know, he was forceful, he was demanding, he was persuading, he could be very kind, he could be very charming, he could be very cross. He could look you in the eye and really terrify you, especially during concert. If you didn't pay attention while you were singing,
Musically, I think he was really absolutely genius. What he did with children, it's unbelievable. We had many chormeisters, we had another conductors, but when he raised his hands, it was another sound from the choir.
Мне трудно как спеть высоко, а смотри, как я умею, потому что рот открой, смотри, как я легко делаю это.
He could show us exactly what should we do and how. He could explain how to connect vowels and consonant letters. So it was a whole theory.
Viktor Sergeyevich could be extremely cruel. Once I bit my lip inside, and I had full mouth of blood. So scared and terrified I was when he was screaming at me.
To tell you the truth, that time, maybe today it sounds like a shock, but that time it was completely normal.
He had this whole way to come close to you, look you straight in the eyes, and right during the concert he would say something like, pay attention, look here. And then he would go back into the song and smile and shape the melody.
If Popov say, you are a disgusting guy. What did you do? You made a mistake. Everybody was crying. Please forgive me. Please, never ever. Please keep me in the choir. Give me another chance. We were, you know, on knees around him. Please, 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 like this.
The Kremlin could command any time, a live concert or a TV performance, to be ready, perfect, in just a few days.
If we had the recording that night, the big buses, coaches, came to this place, picked up children, and they put us in a big studio, studio number 5, this historical studio, with the orchestra. And we record through the night until maybe 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, kids. And then metro was closed. Parents who had cars came and pick up kids, bring them back home unconscious like this, and children who had no cars and family, we slept in the corridor sometimes.
Performing for the government concerts was, I wouldn't say it was fun, because we had long waits.
Did you feel like an ideological outfit, like an ideological tool?
Never, no. We sang so many great children's songs about friendship, about happiness. Cruise Ship Aurora, which is a beautiful song, you know, and the Cruise Aurora was the symbol of the revolution. But just the dark images in the song and the beautiful music that was composed to it. I think all the kids liked singing that song. Что тебе снится? Крейсер Аврора, в час, когда утро встает над него.
Sasha recalls being picked for a special part. A tiny boy singing solo to a packed Bolshoi Theatre, and there, in front of him, Leonid Brezhnev, the ageing, dozing leader of the Communist Party.
I remember it was a song about the dog. Мой щенок похож немного на бульдога и на дога. My main solo part was, I was barking in between of couplets. На собаку водолаза и на всех овчарок сразу, and then I... Brezhnev was sitting and napping during that concert, and when I started barking, he started like that, woke up and make, you know, move of his, you know, head. It was so funny.
The parents weren't allowed into state performances. They stood in the street outside, watching their children on black and white televisions in the department store window. Viktor Popov, though, was about far more. Official business done, he taught the children his real passion, the ambitious classical music that set them apart from other Soviet choirs. Popov believed that the human voice was the spinal cord of culture, from field songs to the complex harmonies of religious praise, forbidden in an atheist state.
We sang glory to the sun, so it became very pagan. But it was the only way to be able to sing this beautiful music. And we didn't think much about the words we were singing. So once Popov was trying to explain to us how deep and important this music is, God, forgive me, God, listen to me, I'm dying, telling us the real sense of these words.
Mama, doctor, sister, friend, everything. We saw children more than their parents.
Irina Kuleshova has been with the choir from its earliest days. A choral musician herself, she was Viktor Popov's assistant and everything to the children in her care, especially on tour.
You see, we visited all country. All Soviet Union, Uzbekistan, Krasnoyarsk, Находка, Владивосток, Тюмень, Норильск, Новосибирск, там здесь все эти Тамбов, around Moscow, Украина, Беларусь, Минск, конечно.
So that was very unusual for that time, really very unusual. We performed in plants, we performed in prisons. They traveled through the whole country of Soviet Union.
We caught up with Masha and some of her friends from the choir in a cafe. They worked then like adults, they said, but of course, they were really kids. There's Marusia, who'd scare the others by messing up her hair and pretending to be a witch. She's an actress now.
For example, очень советская бюджетная гостиница в центре города, правда.
A very Soviet, very inexpensive, budget hotel in downtown Yaroslavl.
Очень скромные, дешевенькие кровати, а мы дети все.
Very modest, very cheap beds. One evening after the concert, we decided to have a pillow battle.
Сначала у нас одна подушка разорвалась.
First pillow was torn apart and feathers all over the room.
Темный ковер, на ковре вот такой слой пуха, который ничем вообще не чищался.
Imagine there's a dark carpet and a thick layer of feathers which you just cannot get rid of, whatever we tried to do.
Совершенно
не спускался. Well, we tried to collect these feathers and put it in the toilet, but it's light, so it wouldn't be flushed down. Next day we're again like playing and we broke.
Сломали ногу у кровати. Кровать
упала. One of the bed's legs and the bed fell down.
Нашли, у кого-то был дезодорант нежность.
Somebody had an old Soviet deodorant called tenderness.
Такой советский.
It was a very Soviet smell.
И он очень хорошо по размеру подошел.
But it was the ideal size to substitute for the leg of the bed.
И мы подставили со спокойной
душой. So we put it under the bed.
It was the height of the Cold War, and travel beyond the Soviet Union was forbidden. But sometimes Viktor Popov would make a very special announcement.
He was a good actor, and the choir was his audience. He really knew how to speak to us. He'd make a pause. I would like to let you know that maybe it's not yet 100%, but there is a very distant possibility that we might be going to another country. It might be a capitalist country that we're going to, and it could be far away. And so the whole choir would go, shh, 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 shh. He obviously understood what that meant to everybody, so it's right away, wow, we would go far away. You know, it was almost like going to the moon. If a friend of yours would tell you that I just came from Mars, that's how you would probably take it if somebody would tell you, I came from Japan. No. It's impossible. And I've seen people in Japan. It's like I've seen the Martians. They're foreigners, mysterious, mythical people.
And you got picked.
I was very, very happy that I got picked. I remember very interesting requests that were given to us. You have to know about Russia in 1980 to understand what a strange request this was. We were told to take with us caviar, smoked sausage, and vodka. To give gifts to people in foreign country. Well, vodka was easy to find, but caviar in 1980 or find nice salami sausage was impossible.
Tickets were bought, hotels booked, sausages packed. But then, disaster. With Soviet troops pouring into Afghanistan, the border was sealed.
I don't know if I can talk about this or not, but when we were supposed to go to Japan for the first time, everything suddenly shut down. What children, what choir, they said. We were leaving tomorrow. Now suddenly we couldn't. Popov went to the state TV and radio HQ to talk to the head of broadcasting's assistants, and they were all saying, oh, it's awful, but what can we do? Then Lapin, the head, came in. Popov went straight to him and told him the situation. So Lapin picked up the direct line to the boss and says, Afghanistan? What Afghanistan? If the big children's choir does not go to Japan, it will be worse than Afghanistan.
At this moment, all okay.
45 days, it was a very long trip. And just getting there, I remember we got on the plane here and we flew to Khabarovsk. And then we took a train and then a 2.5 day boat ride into Yokohama. I just remember things being very beautiful and very neat. Seeing all the things in the store, any food you can possibly dream of. With the little money that we were given, we could buy ourselves things like jeans and tape recorders and bring them home. You really felt like a millionaire.
We visited all countries. Africa, Tunis, Algeria, Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil twice, Venezuela, Ecuador, Peru. Japan.
The world of the Soviet Union was itself changing. A new president, Mikhail Gorbachev, took his place in the Kremlin, and new, unfamiliar expressions were emerging, like glasnost, openness, and perestroika, reform. Misha, Sasha and Masha were growing up.
We were all cynical, none of us believed in this ideology. We were all told political jokes and didn't believe a word which we heard from a TV screen. At that same time, I think none of us believed in any dramatic, substantial change, like a complete change, like the end of the Soviet Union. I don't know a single person who would have predicted at that time this kind of change.
On the streets, at the time, it was just people talking. I was amazed when I saw all the people walking with their little radios next to their ears, listening to the debates in the parliament. Because nobody ever was interested in any of that stuff, because there was never any debate. All of a sudden, people could talk about things. So it was not anymore, everything's fine, we're all doing great, things are fantastic. Oh, we're not hungry. No, it's all great. And then, all of a sudden, you could hear people, things are not going well. And so I thought, that's really amazing. Something is happening.
The suburbs in the south of Moscow. It's a chilly night now and the snow starting to gather around the trees and darkness falling. These are huge blocks of flats, enormous, stretching down the hill across from the wooded park. It seems like thousands and thousands of people. This is the part of Moscow that everybody seems to live in. This is the real thing, not the centre where the bright shiny domes are and the new shopping centres. This is ordinary life, and we've come to find Rita Sukhankina, who was a big star and is still a big star with the group Mirage. That's a pop group that everybody knows. She was also a singer in the choir. Rita's band was one of the first to challenge the old straight-laced rules of the entertainment business.
Entertainment was for old adults, an artistic council of composers and so on, choosing music and songs, checking the content for dubious phrases, checking the performers' clothes, no short skirts or blouses, all that stuff. You had to have a high-neck blouse, long sleeves, dressed to the ground, God forbid you'd show your legs or anything interesting. Then Mirage appears. Girls in miniskirts singing what's on their minds. How wonderful to be in love, date a boy, go to discos. That music just broke through into the crowds in the 1980s, into our culture, and became Soviet pop culture. After Mirage, others followed, and lots of girl bands sprang up.
Сарафанное радио это называется. Знаете, когда из уст в уста, когда тогда не было интернета, но...
There was no internet, but our cassettes were everywhere. Our first cassettes went to friends and they copied them. The originals would wear out, but copies would pass hand to hand, on a train, on a plane. A train conductor would take one and blast it out through a journey. On the bus, in a station, in the market, everywhere people listened for fun. And they asked us, where can we hear that band?
Это все люди слушали и говорили, ой, а где группу эту можно услышать?
If we play one Mirage song in the program, which one do you want?
Музыка нас связала, конечно. Музыка нас связала, тайною нашей стала, всем уговором твержу я в ответ. Нас не разлучат, нет.
So when did you realize it was forever?
In 87, when it became clear to me that something really new is happening, and I was so excited about it. A lot of people were absolutely excited. These were difficult times economically, but I think they were the happiest in my life.
There was no sugar. Can you believe it? No sugar. For Russians who like drinking tea, no sugar. How about no butter? How about no milk? When your child doesn't have any milk, when I have to stand in line hoping that I would get some milk for my child, it's just not going to work. And maybe this is when the things really started falling apart.
You can't imagine the seeing people with their shining eyes in the streets. In Moscow, people in the streets were like ready to give you a hug and kiss you. And we were so excited. We were reading and reading this piles of newspapers and magazines about the past. Well, actually, everything was about the past, but it was a rediscovered past. What really happened in the 30s, during the war, under Stalin and the last years of his power. And also, ironically enough, it was the first time when I read the New Testament.
The late 80s, they were all going. People were packing and going away. That's what people talked about. Who is going, who already gone. I remember thinking that if not now, then when?
Five years after the perestroika revolution began, the hardline backlash feared by so many has finally taken place. Soviet army tanks in their hundreds.
During the coup d'etat in August, I was at the dacha with my son, who was 7 months. And I tried to leave him with my parents to go to Moscow and defend the White House. A lot of my friends, my husband at that time, my ex-husband now, and my future husband, they were all there. Like all good people were there defending the White House, and I couldn't. Of course, we were all sitting with our radio next to our ear, so it was a very emotional experience. So I wrote this long poem, like Scream of the Soul, as we would call it in Russian.
Undaunted, Russia's President Boris Yeltsin used a tank as a platform.
Boris Yeltsin was the embodiment of democracy, and the last lines of my poem were these. Oh, if I could only help to win, I wouldn't need any better prize than to be kissed by this wonderful Boris standing on the tank.
За тех, кто ждать не стал, за непрекаянных, за тех, кто ждать не стал, и уходил, оставив дверь открытой.
Добрый вечер.
Good evening. Exactly 2 hours ago, President Gorbachev resigned his duties as a president of the Soviet Union. Here's the tape.
Дорогие соотечественники.
Dear co-citizens.
Сограждане.
Countrymen.
В силу сложившейся
Due to the situation,
с образованием Содружества независимых государств,
with the formation of the Commonwealth of Independent Governments,
свою деятельность,
I must end my duty
на посту президента СССР.
As president of USSR.
Did I leave or the country left? It's a great question. I think we all left the country. We all jumped the ship. Yes, we all did. All the republics jumped the ship this way as well. Everybody.
Sasha Salyuk, the former soloist, was now a student. He was full of optimism.
First of all, everybody said that now we will live in an open country, we would have an opportunity to go out to see the world, we will walk, foreigners come here. It was time full of hopes. Full of hopes.
All of us left and bam. And of course we were all joking that obviously now that we left the country, it's all falling apart.
Millions of people were on the move as the Soviet Union heaved and split. Russians streamed out of the republic, strangers in places they had called home. Peoples displaced by Stalin went back to villages they'd left 50 years before. 1 million Russian Germans headed for Germany, Greeks to Greece, Jews to Israel and the United States, like Misha and his family. They renounced their citizenship for 900 rubles and set out on a crazy journey.
You're told to be at a train station to go to Italy. Nobody actually comes to get you, you know. Nobody cares that you don't really even know where the train station could be in Vienna, or that you don't speak the language to find out where it is. You find somebody who speaks a little German, you take a bottle of vodka and you go outside and you shake it and you try to stop some kind of a truck. And then you try to explain to them that you need to go somewhere. Please take my suitcases. I don't have any money, but vodka and maybe some caviar, and hopefully they'll take you there. It was like a scene from a movie. I still don't believe that I actually did this. So they bring you to this station, and then they show you this train, and they say, here is your train. You have half an hour to board it. Ready, set, go. And the madness begins. There are no tickets. So people just try to get their stuff into this train. And remember, these are people's life possessions. That's all they have, nothing else. Those few suitcases. Somebody maybe sacrificed everything else and space and took that rug that they adore. I don't know. So everything they have, everything, their family, their whole unit is here. The things went through the windows, through the doors. People, all of a sudden, trying to cooperate as much as they can. I mean, people trying to help everybody because they know that hopefully if I'm helping somebody else, they're helping me. So everybody was all of a sudden very, very friendly to each other. So all this big community trying to get the stuff on this train very, very quickly. Incredible bedlam. When you get to Rome and you're given a hotel room and you're told that you have a few days to find a place to live. Ready, set, go. Every night, the whole Russian community of this small town got together on a central square. No microphone, night. So they would scream, okay, so now we're ready. And then, Stangrad, you got your visa. First out of California. We came in January, so it was beautiful. The warm jacket comes off, the gloves come off, every, you know, hat comes off, and you go, wow, that's how things should be. We came in Ukrainians, refugees. So no passport, stateless. Without knowledge of anyone, you kind of start from the bottom. And so many people that came with us, I know what they had to do. You know, brilliant pianists washing dishes and driving taxis. And many of them never realized their musical dreams and their musical potential. And they were absolutely amazing, brilliant people. Lots of people that we met said, music? What did you say you're doing? Choral music? Who would pay for anybody to conduct a choir or sing? It kind of seems like it's not a good job. Why don't you go, you know, get a taxi, you know, start driving a car? Or so people did say this, but I thought, that's not what I'd like to do. So I went to college. Believe it or not, all of my music classes did not get credit. But the history of Communist Party, I got 2 credits as the 20th century history. What do you know? It's not the palm trees, it's not the hummingbirds. It's people from all over the place. You know, because before in Russia, you only saw people who are people from Russia. So I spoke to somebody who is from India and from somebody who is from Brazil or somebody from Argentina. I mean, there is no American Dream school. You know, there is no place where you can go and then they teach you American Dream. Okay, you know, lesson one, white picket fences. Lesson two, 2-car garage. No, you have to go and learn it from somewhere. And so you just talk to other people and they tell you, oh, you know, you have to be very positive here in the U.S. And people tell it, you know, young people, I remember telling, oh, no, listen, you can't be negative. Like, you know, you might be back in Russia. You have to be positive. You have to think great thoughts, you know, so it's just getting better every day. And then people saying things like, okay, all right, good to see you, sure.
It was absolutely like a new world.
Masha, in her last year at university, was thrilled to get on a student trip to the south of France.
I was in the state of ecstasy for 10 days. I immediately fell in love and I immediately had an affair. Decided I'm not going back. People smiled, were very open, friendly. They spoke very loudly and they laughed very loudly. Like they can just open their mouth and laugh loudly. As if it's not bad behavior. And children were running everywhere and nobody screamed at them like, what are you doing? Sit down. There were dogs in the cafes. How can you imagine that? Every single hour was like a gift. But when I returned, it was the most terrible, traumatic re-entry shock you could think of. For like 2 or 3 days, I spent most of the time sitting in the bathroom and inside the bath, looking at the water running from the tap. I felt like sick, seeing the streets, seeing the people. I was absolutely depressed, finding myself in this deserted, terrible planet. The experience was great. The return was very, very painful.
Masha eventually accommodated to life in Moscow. She got a job at the American embassy, bringing up her young family in a city of bewildering change.
Well, Moscow is just like New York, a city which never sleeps. Traffic jams are most terrible. Even if you compare with the big cities I've been to, like New York and London, you don't understand your happiness. Like Moscow is a disaster. You can spend 4 hours in a traffic jam and it's not the worst yet. Population now in Moscow, it's by different estimates, 11 to 17 million people, including suburbs. It's actually interesting. A couple of times I had to go to work really early, like at 5, at 6, at 7, and with each hour the social mixture, the population you see on the metro changes. It's very interesting. At 5, it's like prostitutes and workers. At 6, it's like working class. At 7, people going to teach at secondary schools, etc., etc. There are so many different lives in Moscow.
Masha, Misha and Sasha's are just 3 stories from the last Soviet generation to sing in the choir. We heard many more. One boy joined the KGB, another became a priest. Others went into business in the new Russia.
Солист Сережа Парамонов.
Я играю на гармошке.
Sergei Paramonov, perhaps the biggest star of the choir, died in his 30s, dragged down by drink. Ten o'clock at night, and we've arrived at the metro station in the north, Ismailovskaya. We're waiting to see Sasha, somebody who could give us layers of understanding of what it takes to be part of that generation who had this extraordinary experience of their country disappearing from under their feet. And somebody who's chosen to stay in Moscow. Sasha, so, nice. Yeah.
Okay, you interrupt an interview. Okay.
No,
okay.
We won't. Yeah. We're just
okay.
Chatting.
Whew, hello. It's a crazy, absolutely crazy schedule and crazy plan and crazy
very
city
crazy.
And idiotic country. Okay. Oi, 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 what a traffic today. Every day in this place. We have no policemen who are working really to make it easy. We have just them sitting somewhere behind the corner and making, you know, bribes. When somebody goes from Kremlin, usually they blocked that road and you can stay here for 2 hours more just waiting until they go. This road goes directly from Kremlin to Rublevka, to this famous place where all these new Russians have their, you know, castles. You know that they surround the places where they live with incredibly high fences, so you actually can't see too much. And pieces of land are so big that houses is deeply inside behind the fence. And they have, you know, sometimes houses of unbelievable size. And this is a synagogue, you see? Memorial synagogue with this yellow star. This hall has a fantastic, perfect acoustic. It's built from marble, granite, and glass. It's almost like a good concert hall. Okay, let's go out.
We came.
Sasha's new life has been one of return to the cultural world of his grandparents. Deep in the basement of the Lenin Library, he uncovered box files of Jewish documents and musical scores, confiscated and hidden by the KGB for decades.
It was a fairy tale for me, a real fairy tale. Can you imagine? Imagine that you are a young boy, you come to the basement. Maybe somebody was killed in this basement, like in 1930s, I have no idea. But they brought these big boxes full of dust. They cracked this, dark brown, this surguch we call. Among these papers, they found handwritten music, separate voices for second tenor, for baritone, for bass, and we started singing them. And it was very beautiful music. From the liturgical services, from Shabbat services. And we sing this music until now. Mikhail Sergeyevich Gorbachev gave us an official permission and he came to the concert in 1996 at the Bolshoi Hall of the Tchaikovsky Conservatory when we sang a very big concert. And then we invited him when we celebrated our 20th anniversary of the choir in 2009.
Yeah.
Throughout everything, the big children's choir sang on, and it still does. This is school number 1113 in central Moscow. Today's children are arriving to practice, stamping the snow from their boots this cold night to save the parquet floor. There's a boy sliding down the banisters, a girl on her mobile phone. These days, of course, there are no four-hour rehearsals, no sleeping in the corridors, no tours in Siberia or performance for the Politburo. And no Mr. Popov. He died in 2008. The choir's new director is Anatoly Kislyakov.
Я играю на гармошке у прохожих на виду. К сожалению, день рождения только раз в году.
You can see photos of Misha, Sasha and Masha and their friends in the stacks of huge red scrapbooks in the storeroom. Programmes of tours, press cuttings and posters, journeys of a lifetime.
I'm just very happy to be an American. Proud to this day, absolutely. I say my Pledge of Allegiance and my kids could be presidents if they want to. They're fully American. But I do want my daughters to listen to songs that teach them something. Teach them something good. Maybe I'm getting old, but I kind of bemoan... let me bemoan the lack of good children's songs about friendship, about being good to each other, about happiness. Just nice kids' songs about those things. Because who do kids listen to today? Do they have good songs that listen to? I don't think so. As we drive around Los Angeles, my daughters operate my iPod. And my iPod is filled to capacity with the songs of our children's choir. And so we could be driving down the beach and listening to cruise ship Aurora, of all things.
Which experienced the change more than anybody else. I hoped for a long time we would become like a normal Western country. There's still a hope, but now it's not that strong. I really hope for a peaceful shift to a more democratic society. But it looks like Russia really has its own path. I wish it was less unique sometimes.
Besides culture, we had nothing. Before, besides culture, we had nothing. Today, besides money, we have nothing. I'm not an idiot, and I knew what communist leaders did with my relatives in Gulag. Or in the camps, and how many people was killed. That's awful, and I know that. And I know what was bad, so I will tell you what was good. For me, in many, many ways, time then was better than now. At least culture, academic studies, arts, support of government. We had Richter, Neigaus, Gilels, Shostakovich, Prokofiev. Today we are free. Where are them all? Where are them? Don't think that I am communist who wants to bring back that time. No, that's not true.
Over the years, thousands of children have passed through this choir and millions of people have heard them. In Moscow and far beyond, everyone we met knew the songs by heart. It's a bond that's outlasted even the Soviet Union.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Zindan, alacaklarını topluyor zindan, alacaklarını topluyor tepeden tırnağa. Borcum yok, bozdurdum ömrümü. Borcum yok, bozdurdum ömrümü. Gençliğim düştü payına. Tedarini hazırla.